Captain Gerald Bradford Smith tonight as he speaks to Mohammed Rafiq. Mohammed Rafiq worked in the banking industry in Britain for decades and is an expert risk specialist. Join them tonight as they speak on the problems in the world economy. How serious is this economic meltdown?
Alternative Radio.
Every Tuesday and Friday at 10 p.m. live on CII.
It's nothing but the best
on CII.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of the French Connection South African edition. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me again tonight for this most important of broadcasts. Of course, I like to give the date at the beginning of my broadcast. It's August 8th, 2008. And we are going to be speaking again with a guest I have had on my French Connection broadcast on the internet and across the world. And his name is Mohammed Rafiq. But before we talk to Mohammed, I wanted to talk to you, to the audience, a little bit about some of your expectations or possible expectations of this programming. First of all, I work very hard at respecting all people in this broadcast. It is important to me that nothing ever pass my lips or the lips of my guest unchallenged that is in any way racist or in any way xenophobic. What I am about and what I've always been about is trying to corner criminals and catch them in the act of their crimes. We have done that with Zionist Judaism in the world. And of course, again, I want to make sure that you all know that not all Jews have been taking part in the crime wave that the world has been experiencing, but they are clearly on the verge of a milestone success in taking over our planet. And it is up to us, it is contingent upon the good people of this planet, the human beings that care about our world, to band together and to understand the conspiracy and to begin to put together a counterbalance to these criminals so that this eventual tyranny cannot visit countries around the world, as it already has for many centuries. You know, there is a historic component to this story that my website, IamTheWitness.com, has treated very, very well. You will find countless books written by scholars, by journalists, by independent researchers of every type and stripe and description, including many from inside the community of Zionist Jews who were committing the crimes, and they finally got right with their guilt and with their crimes and began to tell the truth. One of them that comes to mind is a man named Benjamin Friedman. I mentioned him on my last show. I would urge all of you to try and hear Benjamin Friedman's extensive audio file that he did back in 1960 on this criminal gang. We are on the verge, ladies and gentlemen, of losing our freedom worldwide. That means Pan-African freedom, that means North American freedom, that means European, and yes, of course, Asian freedom as well. We're on the verge of another round of criminal wars that were started on false pretenses. We're on the verge of more false terrorism. These are events that are starting to look like they're on the verge, just moments away. I was reading many of the articles that I read today in today's news tell me that great activities are taking part in the northern part of the Hindu Kush. There are problems between India and Pakistan being fomented, falsely wound up, if you'll allow. There are problems in Ossetia in the northern part of Georgia, where the region that borders the Russian Republic is now under full war conditions. There is death and destruction being meted out on populations and horrible things being done to the indigenous peoples of that region, including the Muslim population of that area. But this is only the start, I fear. Of course, this financial mess is already visiting South Africans. It's visiting North American families. People in all economies of the world have experienced higher fuel prices, higher commodity prices. South Africa's imported inflation this year was 21%, according to statistics coming out of a reasonable estimate of these inflation rates. It's called the Central Bank What did it say? The stats on SR imported commodity inflation said 21.2% compared to an upward revised 16. Now, this is just at the beginning. We've got monetized, dollarized control of world commodity prices, ladies and gentlemen, and this is what you must understand. The world uses the dollar to trade its valuables. If you will allow me to make a slight description here, the oil, the gold, the wheat, the sorghum, rices, all of these things are traded in dollar-denominated transactions. Because the Federal Reserve in the United States has been printing money like crazy, all in hopes of slowing down a credit meltdown that is well advanced, and as far as I've been able to glean, there is no solution for, and my guest will talk about this in a minute. These problems are not going to abate. Your food prices are going to continue to rise, sadly. Your fuel prices for your vehicles, if you're heating your home in the winter in South Africa, of course, many people don't realize, but during the summertime in this part of the hemisphere where I live in central France, you folks are experiencing cooler temperatures. Your night times can get chilly. So the fact is, those prices are going to rise. Your fuel for your electric bill is going to go up. Your cooking gas is going to rise. The oils that you pay to cook your food in are going up. These are not small increases, 20-25%. At the same time, it is very clear that the wages and salaries are also shrinking in comparison to these price rises. So there's a lot of hardship on the horizon. There's a lot of problems on the horizon. And I know who's done it to us all, and I'm going to tell it to you. So that's the beginning of this show. We're going to do a little bit of history this show, talk a little bit about the implosion of the caliphate in the Ottoman Empire and how that got this latest crime wave underway. And we're also going to talk about the financial implosion with my guest, Mohammed Rafik. Mohammed, are you with me?
Hello, Darryl.
Yes, Mohammed, it's great to have you with me again. We caught only the last few minutes of the last broadcast together. I'm so happy that you can be with me again to do this most important show.
Well, thank you for having me back on, and assalamu alaikum to all the Muslim brothers and sisters listening out there.
Well, you know, Mohammed, I come from a deep-seated belief that human beings deserve better than we've been getting, and I'm trying to share my truth, my facts, with as many people as will listen to me about them. What we know, Mohammed, and I'll give you a nice lead-in here, what we know is that the problems that we are facing financially can't be repaired. And basically, the only things that are happening in the global economy are stopgap measures that are ultimately going to fail. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever. What has broken is of a nature that cannot be repaired. A bit like dropping a mirror, Darryl. You know, once you've dropped a mirror or pane of glass, the pieces that you have left after it's shattered, they can't be put back together. This is a mess which cannot be put back together. And as you quite rightly state, there have been a lot of interim measures to try and delay the inevitable.
Yeah.
They've only managed through intervention of the Federal Reserve Bank and the Central Bank of Europe, the ECB, and the Bank of England, to buy some time in this crisis, but that's all they've succeeded in.
Well, you know, you heard me read off the inflation rate in South Africa, and there are inflation rates across the Horn of Africa and through the central regions of Africa that are actually higher than South Africa. My point is this: inflation throughout Europe and the United States and Africa and Asia is in double digits. I mean, we're not talking 8, 7, 8, 9%. We're talking 10, 12, 14, 20, 25%. If you take Zimbabwe, for example, it's in the tens of thousands of percent. But my point is this: people are becoming more and more pressured to get through each month that passes. And it seems to me that rather than getting easier, it's probably going to get more difficult in the near future. What is your take on that?
Well, I'm afraid you've got the numbers spot on there, Darryl. And that one of the problems that we have is the way in which inflation is calculated. We discussed this on a previous show.
Yeah.
It's very important for the listeners out there to understand that there isn't a fixed formula for inflation, and in fact governments from one country to another change the way they do this. In the African states, because they are generally considered third world or what have you. They have mechanisms for calculating inflation imposed upon them by bodies such as the World Bank and the IMF, so they don't really get a lot of say in how they calculate their figures. Whereas in Europe and in the States, they tend to change the way in which they calculate it. So the ingredients may change on a weekly or even a monthly basis.
Yeah.
The reason I raise this point, Darrell, is because the inflation that we have here in the UK and Europe and the United States is far, far higher than the figures which are being given to the public for their own consumption.
Mohammed, I would say in the order of 300% higher. They're saying 4% inflation, and I would say somewhere between 12 and 16% in my view.
That's far more believable. One of the things that they do, for instance, to give an example, Darrell, with the high cost of fuel and petrol in the UK has gone up in the last 12 months from about 85 pence a litre, less than a pound a litre, to £1.15. So it's gone up 30 pence, which is from the original 85, of course, but best part of up 40%.
That's right.
Increase. So what they did was they removed petrol from the ingredients of the calculation of inflation in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, because that's gone up, they dilute that number, whereas a year ago, it was included in the calculation.
Well, you know, in the United States, for the calculation of inflation, they weren't including housing prices 5 years ago because houses were doubling in value in short periods of time, so they took that out. Now that the housing prices are dropping, they've re-added them now to the calculation, hoping to get a decrease in what it looks like to have housing. In other words, this is just manipulation at a level that is almost it is criminal. But you know, let's take a look at that IMF and World Bank for a moment, and some of the experiences you've had with this group. I mean, we've got Wolfensohn. And we've got Dominique Strauss-Kahn now working with this with the IMF World Bank team. We've had Wolfowitz. What we've had is actually mainstream mainline Zionist bankers involved at this at the highest level. Have we not?
No doubt whatsoever, Darrell.
Now,
every one of them to a man was a Zionist.
That's right. Now, interesting. Back in the 90s. When they were trying to implode the Asian economies and take the value of those growth economies away from the public and away from the home investors, they were successful in Indonesia. They were successful in Vietnam. They were successful in Thailand. But one of the countries that was able to dodge their criminal scheme was Malaysia under Tan Mahathir Mohamad. And you worked with these folks a little bit during that period, didn't you?
Oh, I did indeed, Darrell. Myself and a couple of other Muslims were responsible for getting very important documentation through to Mahathir to help him formulate a plan to help revive the Malaysian economy. He was brave enough as a Muslim leader to actually look at what Islam said on these matters and to actually say, even if it means we'll have a fight against these Zionist bankers, he was prepared to do it. And he's living proof that you can fight and you can win.
Well, he did it diplomatically, though, I must interject. He didn't quit the IMF World Bank system. What he did say was that your lines of credit are still sitting there available, but we're gonna not take them at the moment. We think we can get through this without them. We don't need your lines of credit, but we're not going to quit your system. So basically, he didn't cause himself to go fall on the wrong side of this criminal gang and end up being invaded. Because you know as well as I do, if you don't play ball with these guys, you're up for the next war.
Indeed, that was exactly the advice that we gave, in fact, Darrell, and that advice came on the back of our experiences with Professor Erbakan and the Refa Party of Turkey. When the Refa Party of Turkey came to power with Tansel Çiller and they shared a coalition government in Turkey, we were a bit more forthright at that time in some of our ideas in trying to get interest-free economy up and running. And so we had a full-scale plan put in place, and then Professor Erbakan had a visit in his office by all 30 generals from the Turkish army, or rather 27 out of the 30, as his right-hand man, who was one of my best friends at that time in the Muslim community and spent a lot of time with me on preparing the documents and the new articles and memorandum of association for the Central Bank of Turkey. He was visited by 27 out of 30 of the generals and was told that if he attempted to implement this plan, that they would foment a military coup.
Yes, yes. And now, you have to, in your next breath, Mohammed, could you tell these people if you believe that the generals of Turkey are tied at the hip with the Israelis?
Oh, there was no doubt about it. A further investigation by the brothers and sisters of the Refa Party, they discovered that these 27 generals all actually belong to the same sect of Islam, an Alawi sect from southeast Turkey, which was very closely tied as a religious group with the Israeli state for some obscure reason.
Well, there's no surprises there. When you start digging under the surface of this criminal gang, you find out that they morph themselves into all kinds of organizations, and they will tell you whatever it is you want to hear in order to get what they think they need. And this is one of the main parts of the conspiracy that we've been able to prove over time. But let's go on for a moment here and talk a little bit about how much time we have. I cannot see. I've been surprised, as well as you have, Mohammed, how long they've kept this thing going. Last October, when we were discussing the imminent debacle that actually took shape in October, November of last year, we knew that what had happened was it was the game over kind of event. It was, this is the end, and I can't see anything fixing this. What shocked me was that it's taken so long for the damage to really percolate to the top of the world's economy, but it's here now. And I'm wondering how much longer they can keep this farce, this debacle from actually taking complete control of everyone's economy.
Well, the amount of time that they've managed to buy, they've had to throw everything at it in order to buy this amount of time, Darrell. It is quite incredible that they have managed to make it last this long. But one of the reasons for that, when we look at the amount of money which the Federal Reserve Bank has for intervention in the money markets, that is typically about $800 billion. And when you think, Darrell, that money normally is used by the Fed to prop up the U.S. economy.
That's right.
The whole economy now,
yeah.
and to make interventions in the money markets and for short-term borrowing and lending and just generally to keep the cash flow of the entire country running smoothly. That's the normal purpose of short-term borrowing.
Yeah.
$700 out of that $800 billion has now actually been lent to financial institutions. Short-term borrowing.
Yeah.
$700 out of that $800 billion has now actually been lent to financial institutions, British and American.
Which most people are not aware that foreign banks have actually gone knocking at the window and borrowed money from the American taxpayer, who's ultimately going to be on the hook for this, right?
Exactly, and that bank was in fact Barclays Bank from London, that was lent $42 billion through its Barclays Capital New York branch. But that $700 billion has been lent to private financial institutions that were otherwise insolvent.
Yep.
They would be bankrupt. They would be out of business and gone. Doors closed by now. Had not the U.S. government lent them $700 billion out of its $800 billion that it raises to finance its own economy normally.
Mm-hmm.
So all that money was handed out to these private institutions, and of course we had a very rare event, unheard of to my knowledge, Darrell, where the banks were, in spite of this generosity by the Federal Reserve Bank, were still too frightened to lend to other banks.
Well, yeah. Now, why don't you explain why that is? Because everyone had failing assets on their balance sheets that no one would admit. Nobody wanted to come out and be first to say, my balance sheet is in trouble, I haven't got any money in my accounts, there's problems across my asset classes, and if I admit this, there's going to be a run on my institution and my company's going to be out of business. So,
well, that's a very important point for everybody to understand, actually, Darryl. Of course, there's been a huge amount of cover-up and deceit in all of this.
Yeah.
Where financial institutions, you and I, we've been on the radio repeatedly this year, pointing out that the chief executive of this bank or the chairman of that bank was in the press 6 weeks ago saying, my bank is fine, there are no problems with my bank, everything is perfect, and we're not suffering as all the other banks are.
That's
then
right.
6 weeks later, there's a rights issue. They're raising cash from current shareholders. They're trying to borrow money. Or then they make a disclosure that they have to write off billions of dollars. The number of lies and the speed at which they come has been overwhelming this year.
That's right.
It's been incredible.
Well, let's talk about, Mohammed, I don't want to just cut you off, but let's talk about the big mess that's right on the cusp of being front and center again here, and that is the bond market failure. Now, let's give it. Why don't you give people a little overview of why the bond market's important and how it's important to companies and banks, and why last year when they redid their loans, they're all coming due now. Why don't you give some of the people an understanding of that particular part of this next wave we're going to see?
Well, of course, the reference that everybody keeps hearing, this idea of subprime. Subprime failure was always a reference to the financial instrument known as a bond, in its form a mortgage-backed security that was used to raise money. And the way that works out is fairly simple, really. You and I want to, we have a mortgage company and we want to lend money to people, but we don't have any. So we would go to the bond market, to professional institutional lenders, and say, look, we want to raise money, and we're raising it for the purpose of lending to other people for the purpose of their home. For instance,
yeah,
we would issue pieces of paper which are basically a loan agreement between us and whoever is buying our bonds, but also we would guarantee those bonds. And we could use the properties that we've got in the mortgages, or we could use all sorts of things as guarantees. In
mm-hmm.
These are very flexible instruments in this day and age. 20 years ago, Dow, they were very, very much plainer
yes.
in the way that they were traded and the form that they had.
Well, they did go international, which is why with the contagion around the world, which is why if you are if you're in Kinshasa or you're in Durban or you're in anywhere, USA, it doesn't matter where you are, these products, these instruments have circled the globe. Am I correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's another development as a result of computing and making it easier to buy them. It means that in Europe, a large number of financials have been able to buy these bonds traded in America. It's maybe difficult for people to imagine, but I mean, I was working in the City of London, Darryl, the best part of 20 years ago, before there was any form of internationalization on these, and somebody who was trading U.S. bonds in the United Kingdom in London was considered an exotic trader.
Yep.
He was doing something a bit, unusual and highly specialized. Now everybody has access to it because of the computerization and globalization as a result of the technology. So now the institutions have bought these bonds, they effectively lent money to U.S. mortgage corporations, who in turn lent them on to people. But of course, as you and I are very well aware, and probably some of the listeners out there, bonds are used for all sorts of financing. So we would have, say, British Telecom here in the U.K. is a major bond issuer. They've got, the last time I looked, almost £10 billion worth of bonds,
yeah.
which they've issued, and at different times, They have different maturities. There's a different amount. And these are all called tranches. So they might have issued some 5 years ago to buy one company, 6 years ago to buy another company, 10 years ago to buy another telecoms company. So these big corporations now, they like to issue bonds in Europe, raise money for acquisitions. That's very common, to buy other companies.
Yep.
And this is how these corporates raise their money. So this bond market, basically, is very important. Again, coming back to British Telecom as an example, they could have bonds which they've issued over the last 15 years, because some of these bonds now go out to 30 years into the future.
Right.
Very long-term view. And that means that, well, I'm going to borrow money from somebody and I'm going to pay them back in 30 years' time. Not 5 years, not 10, even 30 years. And what happens, and this is the big crisis unfolding around us now and is about to get far worse over the next few months, these bonds, if you're British Telecom and you've got several sets issued out there, maybe some 5 years ago, some 7 years ago, some 9 years ago, you might find all of a sudden that one set are maturing. You've got to pay the money back, and your cash flow isn't there.
That's right. And then cash flow meaning there's no way that the size of that service can be met. The money you've got in your coffers will not pay your workers and keep your lights and electric on, plus pay this off. So usually what they do is they go back to the bond market and do a reissuance, or they buy one out and renegotiate it for another length of time.
That's correct, Dale. They refinance because their current cash situation isn't strong enough to meet the obligations. They borrow their way out of it. They say, well, we can afford to pay back 4%, so we'll give 40% in cash, and the other 60 we'll do as a new bond issue as at 4 years from now, and they push that out again into the future. So they avoid meeting that obligation now. And it's fairly common. It's not unusual, this type of refinancing or bond restructuring. Very, very common. But, of course, the reason it's not common now is that the confidence in the markets isn't there.
That's right.
People don't trust buying these bonds anymore. They don't know if the company's going to be there.
That's right.
So if you're in the situation where you have paid and you can't refinance, can't restructure, you then go into what's known as default now. They can't actually make the payment on the bond. And so the famous rating agencies, where we hear people having AAA status or AA or single A, these agencies that give ratings, they automatically have to categorize that debt as D, default.
That's right.
And we're facing now a catastrophe in that the markets are so illiquid, it's so impossible for anybody to borrow. A friend of mine is a bond dealer at one of the largest banks in Europe in bond trading, and he can't raise money for Fiat or any of the big clients, institutional clients that he has.
Well, let's give an example right now of somebody who's moving into default that everyone's heard of. That has just asked, in a backdoor deal, is asking for the American government to bail them out, which is General Motors and Ford. So if you like Ford Motor Company or you like General Motors, both of those companies, as we speak, have not got the money on their balance sheets to pay their bills, and they are in need right now, desperately, of someone to come and lend them money, because if they don't, they are thoroughly and completely bankrupt.
Absolutely. We have a dreadful situation where General Motors, which is ordinarily a great company, has got bonds out there, $60 billion worth of bonds, Darrell, which are now all recategorized, some of them in default because they've been unable to pay redemption maturity, pay the money back, or even meet coupon payments.
Yep.
So this is going to get very scary, and the reason it's going to get scary is that the money dried up, as they say, liquidity, as people may hear this term thrown around in the financial press. The liquidity dried up, the cash dried up for new bonds last October. So that means that if your bond is due for maturing this coming October, you're not going to be able to refinance. And this is a common period in the year four bond issues, you know, Daryl, because, you know, it goes a bit quiet over the summer, sort of back end of August, September, it all starts picking up, and people try to get all of their issues done for the end of November, because then we're into December and the Christmas period. So there's a bit of a window which is very popular for issuing bonds. And we're coming up to that period very soon. All these companies, which, and there'll be hundreds of them out there,
thousands,
don't have the means to repay maturing bonds or even their annual interest payments. Those companies can't refinance or restructure.
Well, here's the worst of part of the rub, though, Muhammad. It's even easier to understand and more devastating. As everyone has been put under these awful conditions of trying to figure out how they can pay their food bill or their fuel for their automobile, they've taken money away from extra spending, such as that extra shirt or that extra pair of shoes or that. So what we've got is companies around the globe that used to produce the shirts and shoes and things that haven't been sold. Now they're all in trouble because their balance sheets are demanding payment for many, many bills that they can't pay. Those companies are going to come to the window for money, and it's not going to be available. And so we've not just got hundreds of companies. We've probably got tens of thousands of companies around the globe, including Pan-African companies, all European companies, Asian businesses that are not solvent, and they are going to be in situations between now and Christmas that they face elimination. They're going to be gone. And that's how bad this is. I'll give one example in real time. There's two periods of the year in France where they have sales. They're called le solde, where people can go and the companies can get rid of their excess inventory. They put up this solde at the beginning of July, and it ended just recently. Did you know that it was the worst solde in the history of soldes that they've been doing in the modern era? Nobody came out to buy any of the discounted items, Muhammad. Nobody. These companies and stores that were selling things at half and 70% off did terrible. Nobody purchased the 70% off. Nobody showed up to buy it.
Well, of course, Darryl, you and I are not surprised because we are aware of the double-squeeze nature of what's going on.
Yep, that's right.
We heavily criticized December last year.
Yep.
Ben Bernanke.
Yep.
When he was very cavalier with the U.S. economy and failed to give it the kickstart it needed for the Christmas period and the Christmas sales. He brought about some of the worst December and Christmas sales on record, and that filters through to everybody. Anybody who's producing goods for consumption, European markets, in Africa, if you've got things that you need people to consume out there in Europe, out there in the States, there aren't buyers. They're going to lose buyers. You're going to have stock and no cash because people are not buying. And that is the second, that's the double whammy side of that. That's the second element, which was completely avoidable and was gross negligence on the part of Bernanke.
Well, now, I'm not completely convinced that that elements of it weren't intentional. And then here, in fact, when we start moving into the rising prices of wheats and grains and meat and foodstuffs, we've already seen worldwide price rises so desperately high, and there are many societies around the world where people spend upwards of 30-40% of their income on food, and then they've seen their price of their food go up by 25-30%. This makes them, at the end of every month, after working a full month, they can't feed themselves or their families. And this is just the start of this problem, Muhammad. It is going to get far worse. And when I've explained this to people, you know, they get a little glossy-eyed with me. They're like, oh, really? And they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to understand it. But they're going to understand it, or their belly's going to, they're going to go to bed without any food in their belly, and that's going to be an understanding that I hope and pray that these people don't have to really experience. But they already are, aren't they?
It's already happening, Daryl. And, you know, for those people whose eyes gloss over on such important subjects, you know, there is a forewarned is forearmed. If you've been given advance knowledge of something coming along and you don't take notice of that warning, then a bit like, you know, cliff, if you don't stop driving your car and go over the cliff, there's nobody to blame but yourself. You know, the signals are out there, the signs are out there. Now it's not just signals and signs, Daryl, as we were warning about. It's now become news.
Well, and
oh, this has happened and that has happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, it looks like to me, though, and this has always been the case, when things go bad for the economy of America or the economy of Europe, you'll often see violence break out worldwide to move people's attention away from the financial side of their problems. And right now, it looks like we've got a fleet moving into the Middle East, a huge fleet of French and British and American warships, doubling the number of battle groups off of Iran. Of course, they're saber-rattling. Israel's going to do this, Israel's going to do that. What most people in the world are not aware of, Mohammed, but that we are, is that this is being propagated and pushed forward by an elite group of criminals that happen to come from a group of Zionists that have been fomenting these problems for a few hundred years in the modern era, but even before that. You want to get into a little bit of what kind of control this particular group has over the financial system and over our political system?
Well, this group, of course, has sadly been working hard over the past few hundred years to get to an unassailable position of power over the financial system. They worked hard throughout the whole of Europe a couple of hundred years ago. They had most of their early major success in France, didn't they, Dale?
They did indeed, yep.
With the Freemasonic lodges and the legal system, and they actually used that as a base.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a matter of open record. It's not a conspiracy theory, it's a historical record that the operations of the Young Turk movement, which was, of course, run by Donmay Jews, they were the wife-swapping Jews of Turkey, who believed that they're allowed to tell people outwardly that they were Muslim, but secretly they kept their Jewish, Talmudic Jewish beliefs, and believed in Zabbatai Zevi.
Yep.
As Messiah,
yep.
And that those people were engaged to bring about the Young Turk Revolution. Hence, it wasn't a young Muslim revolution. They emphasized the idea of being Turks and nationalism, moving away from the identity of being Muslim. This way, they didn't have to compromise their beliefs, as it were. And that Young Turk movement, of course, got rid of the last caliphate of the Muslims.
That's right.
That was the last time that the Muslims were united under a single leader.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the consequences that we still feel today. I'll give you a good example of the king of Jordan. He has been clearly connected to the Freemasonic lodges of the Middle East, and he is a Freemason. And by virtue of being a Freemason, he believes in Kabbalistic arts. And the Kabbalah is a virulent form of Judaism, and it's the old Babylonian Talmudic tradition being put into practice in our modern world. But he's not the only one. We've got people within the Moroccan hierarchy, and we have people within that were working out of Egypt, and including people coming from the Saddam Hussein back in the 1980s. Was allied with these same forces, and he was installed into Iraq. My point being is that after the caliphate fell at the beginning of the last century, the consequences for individual regions and individual peoples of the Islamic world were never the same and have not ever been the same since.
No, the Muslims have never ever been able to regain anything. That was the last vestige of self-respect, and I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that the Ottoman caliphs were saints. Some of them were far from that. But as a community, the Muslims had strength in being united. And of course, this system that was used, of course, the Kabbalistic system of the Jews, is a bit difficult for some people to comprehend, but for Muslims very easy, is a system of magic, sihr. So for someone who would outwardly say that they were Muslim to get involved in practicing witchcraft, actually, magical witchcraft, Daryl, is the second gravest sin in Islam after polytheism, known in the Arabic as sihr. So for Muslims to actually be practicing second gravest sin, whilst outwardly pretending to be part of the Muslim community, is an outrageous exception on the brothers and sisters of the community. And all the fruit that has brought the Muslim community ever since, whether it be the wars in Lebanon, the tyranny in Palestine, the invasions in Egypt, all that it brought the Muslim community is bloodshed and...
Well, and then we watch the deceptive nature of the perpetrators, where, you know, they do the Levant affair, where they set up terrorist attacks against Western targets to try and blame it on Muslims, where they attack the ship called the USS Liberty and turn around and say, you know, and try to blame it on saying that it was a terrorist vessel. Or what I've been able to discover in some of my research, people as like Abu Nidal, who in fact was an operative working for the Israelis all the time, and then the whole time giving a bad name to Islam. And when we've got people like Muhammad Atta training at bases across America in preparation for him to, you know, come onto the world stage as the leading hijacker of 9/11, when in fact the entire episode was done through the top reaches of the American government, the MI6, and the Israelis. And my point is this, is that because the press is controlled and owned by these people that we are fighting against, they get to spin the story for the rest of the world, where they keep saying it's Islam doing this. And I've recounted the story to you when I did it last week on the show, where, you know, when I was in London trying to speak on the Islam channel with one of the hosts, where she was making apologies for Islam and being involved in the bombings of London. And I was floored at first, and then I was angry. Because this is not what's happened here, and I know what's happened. And so what we've got to do here, Muhammad, as best we can, is begin to tell these facts to as many people as we can possibly get to listen to us. Because if we don't stop this stuff immediately in its tracks, humanity is going to suffer in terrible ways that they haven't even experienced yet. It's going to get terrible for all of us. And this is why uniting behind truth and honesty and people of good character in this battle.
Indeed, darling. And of course, another very important historical false flag operation coming around the time of the Young Turk movement, which you covered on the French Connection at the time.
Yep.
Earlier this year, was of course the mass murder of Armenian Christians.
Yes.
They were murdered wholesale, and the people often try to blame the Young Turk movement, which is, in essence, correct. What they don't understand is that actually the people giving those execution orders included people like Jabotinsky.
That's right.
Jabotinsky himself, Darryl, I mean, you know the background of this man.
With Carrasso and including Nicolas Sarkozy's grandfather.
These people... Jabotinsky had actually been a Russian revolutionary.
That's right.
The Bolshevik revolution in Russia.
That's right.
What are you doing in Turkey? All of the execution orders and the murders of those Armenian Christians were actually done by Donmay Jews. Maybe Muslims had been rank-and-file soldiers, but the orders were given by Donmay Jews. And the fact of the matter is, that even the Armenian Christian have now woken up to the fact that it wasn't the Muslims that they'd lived side by side with centuries without war that had executed them and their families and their grandfathers, whatever. They now understand it was actually Zionists who'd done it.
And that country, Turkey, of course, Ataturk, came from the same group. Ataturk came from the Salonika Greece Lodge of Freemasonry that was ceded to Salonika through the Grand Orient Lodge of Italy, which was ceded to Italy from the Grand Orient Lodge in Paris. And all of these criminals, we sussed this out in a very in-depth audio file some time ago, didn't we, Muhammad?
We did indeed, Dale. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a matter of open historical fact.
Yep.
In one of the largest biographies on the life of Ataturk, He himself admitted that he came from Salonika and that he came from a Jewish family, Don May Jew family, and that he wasn't actually Muslim. It's for this reason that he removed the Islamic script from the Turkish language among his great achievements, and got everybody on the Latin script. For that, Turks were able to pick up the Quran and read the Holy Quran as a matter of course, because they understood the writing. They've now lost that ability as a result of the machinations of Ataturk and his followers.
Well, you know, we're in a situation now where these people are not, they're so emboldened with their newfound control that they're starting to take actions around the globe that can only be seen as an attempt to make a single world government on, and they're going to impose this horrible idea of their own on the rest of us, and the suffering is going to be unimaginable if they're successful. But see, one of the regions of the world that has suffered the most throughout time at their hands, of course, is Pan Africa. What we know today also, and you'll find on the French Connections website, IamTheWitness.com, is that the slave trade to the United States was a Jewish-run organization. The ships were owned by them. The money that came to pay off the people collecting black African slaves, bringing them to America, were Jews. They were using the manufacturing rum to trade with coastal African tribesmen who would go out into the interior and collect hard-working African tribes members and bring them to the coast in chains, and upwards of 90% of these people who were taken died. We're talking about a genocide in the tens of millions, in the double tens of millions. It's incredible. It's beyond anybody's imaginings to even consider, and it was done at the hands of Zionist Jews. And one of the biggest names in that is a man named Aaron Lopez, who was a Murano Jew, who set himself up in Newport, Rhode Island. So the history of Africa cannot be separated from what happened in North America or the colonialism that was meted out by these same forces, Muhammad.
No, indeed. It's very interesting that the connection, the Jewish connection for the backing for Cecil Rhodes. You know, we like to throw around Cecil Rhodes as the man who went out there and tried to conquer Rhodesia, as it became known, but not many people are aware, and they should be aware, that he went out there on the money from one man back all the way. Of course, he did a bit of a Stalin in that he, once he got power in the area, actually turned his back on that one man, but that one man was none other than a Mr. Rothschild.
Well, and not only did, but see, what we forget too, though, there's a caveat to that. When Rothschild needed to reassert control over that region again, he sent in his control over the British forces to do that very thing. And of course, you have the Boer War, which you know, one of the biggest crimes that these people commit worldwide is taking normally fine living communities that live together in harmony, good people, and pit them against one another and create hatred and enmity toward the two groups, and then they play them off against each other. And in the case of South Africa, of course, what we had was an apartheid system that was developed, but they do this, they're doing it now in Palestine. They did it in Northern Ireland. Same powerful forces at work. This stuff is a global strategy for destroying cohesion among human beings, and a deceptive nature that keeps these truths away from the public.
But isn't it an irony, Darrell, that, you know, the great amount of outrage that was in the world at the apartheid system, that people understood what that actually meant and how wrong it was. Yet when we have the same system, maybe even worse, I didn't live under it, so I'm not commenting, I'm saying maybe even worse in Palestine and the modern Israeli state area, where there are dual passport types and this absolute subclass of people that can be shot and killed like rabbits or some kind of goat or something, like they're not human beings, that same system is not criticized.
That's right. And if you criticize that system, you're all of a sudden anti-Semitic.
Terrible. Absolutely disgraceful how they've managed to make the world that recognise the injustice in one place not stand up and recognise the injustice in another.
Well, you know, there are people like you and I in this world, Muhammad, and many, many tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of more of us. And I count many Pan-African members in the fight that have had enough of this, and we know the facts now. We've been given a clearer vision. We've been afforded a true history in some instances, and we're beginning to learn. And the learning curve is sharpening, and it's becoming easier for us to understand the depths of the depravity of this group. And I gotta tell you. That the battle is raging now across the world's internet sites, and of course, now you need to move this down to the level of the man on the street, where the knowledge of these facts are beginning to circulate from man and woman to man and woman, and neighbor to neighbor, and colleague to colleague, where this whole system can be unraveled, if you will.
And unraveling it certainly needs to be. One of the things that is very important for everybody listening out there, Daryl, and you've stressed so often, and I've supported you in this, is that people have to recognize this is not a subject to turn away from. These are subjects that you've got to dig into. Check the facts yourself. This is if there is a phrase to sum up the French Connection, due diligence. You have always said, Daryl, go and check the facts. The facts are all there on your website.
Yep.
If we're making anything up, if we're telling lies, if we're exaggerating, then just look at the information and make the decision yourself. People will soon realize that this is the truth. And Christians listening, Jesus, peace be upon him and his mother, he said, the truth will set you free. As for Muslims, we have to seek the truth. Even in the smallest chapters in the Quran, we're taught in time, Surah Time, the chapter Time, that there are four conditions a Muslim must make, one of which is exhorting to the truth, and the other is exhorting to perseverance. Otherwise, we will be lost. This is part of that truth of what's going on in the world. We mustn't turn our backs on it. We have duties as Muslims to look at this and join this fight en masse.
Well, we are calling upon the world's peoples to start looking at these facts. Now, of course, Muhammad, my site has grown in both respect and stature because I have been willing to correct a mistake I might have made. One of the things that's happened here is, you know, I've been trying to compile these facts for years now. And when I come upon something that is that needs to be rewritten or rejigged or re-explained because a new fact comes to light, I've always been willing to do that, to make it a clearer